Mahabharata, Chapter 56, The Rakshasas Show Their Power. Dhritarashtra wept when he heard of his sons' deaths. O Sanjaya, I am afraid. I am amazed to hear of Bhima's godlike prowess. Hearing, too, of my son's humiliation, I am burning with anxiety. What will the outcome of this war be? I remember only Vidura's prophecies. By the influence of destiny, it seems his words will prove true. The Pandava heroes are emerging successful, even though our forces, headed by Bhishma and Drona, appeared so invincible. What austerities have they performed? What knowledge did they cultivate? What boons have been bestowed upon them? Alas, my sons are doomed. Dhritarashtra began to wail. Sanjaya consoled him, but the king continued to weep for some time. Struggling to regain his composure, he clutched the arms of his golden throne and continued to speak. I am being chastised by destiny. Tell me, Sanjaya, why are my sons being killed while the Pandavas survive? I cannot see any end to this ocean of distress into which I am being plunged. I am like a man who desires to swim across the sea. No doubt Bhima will slay all my sons. O Sanjaya, tell me what Duryodhan and his generals are doing as a result of the Pandavas' victory. Sanjaya sat at the king's feet with his eyes closed. He could see everything occurring on the battlefield in both camps. Visualizing the scene in Duryodhan's tent, he said, "Listen carefully, O king, and I shall describe everything. What is the use of hoping to be victorious? You have already been told so many times about the Pandavas' position. Those heroic men live only for Krishna's pleasure, and the universe itself depends on Krishna's will. Your sons are wicked and have perpetrated numerous ills upon their cousins. Now they are reaping their bitter fruits." Sanjaya then continued his description of the battle. Duryodhan entered his tent with a heavy heart. Tens of thousands of his troops lay dead on the battlefield, and Bhima had killed 14 of his brothers. Tears of grief and frustration ran down his face as he took his seat among his counselors. Turning to Bhishma, he spoke in a voice laden with sorrow. "O grandsire, on my side I have you, Drona, Shalya, Kripa, Kritavarma, Ashvatthama, and many other warriors, incapable of being defeated. All of you are ready to lay down your lives for my sake. Our numbers are far superior to those of the Pandavas. In such circumstances, I cannot understand how we can be suffering at their hands. How is it, O hero, that we are being overcome? What is the secret of their success?" Bhishma, laying his silver helmet by his side, turned and looked at Duryodhan. "O king, I will explain once again why we cannot defeat the Pandavas. For your own good, you have repeatedly been counseled to seek peace with them. You have chosen to ignore these instructions. Therefore, you will have to suffer, as all your counselors predicted. I have cried myself hoarse trying to make you see sense. What more do you want me to say? However, because I desire your welfare and the welfare of your brothers, I will try one more time." Bhishma felt his compassion stir for the grieving Duryodhan, who sat weeping as he remembered his brothers, relatives, and friends who had died for him. Although the prince had always scorned his well-wisher's advice, Bhishma hoped that his misery would make him more receptive. The Kuru commander waited until he had the attention of all the kings present, and then he spoke in a loud voice. "O king, O Lord of the earth, there was not, is not, and will never be any person who can slay the Pandavas while Krishna protects them. I will describe to you an ancient history which I heard while I resided in heaven with my mother. Once Brahma was sitting in his assembly with the gods. At that time the earth goddess Bhumi came to him crying. She said that she was afflicted by the sinful acts of the demons and Danavas, all of whom had taken birth on earth. Thus she sought the shelter of the unborn creator. O my lord, she prayed, all the mighty and wicked Daityas and Danavas, whom the gods slew in battle, have now appeared on earth as kings and warriors. I can no longer bear the burden of such cruel men who rape and plunder my resources for their own selfish pleasure. Feeling compassion for Bhumi, Brahma, accompanied by the gods, went at once to the limitless milk ocean, where the inconceivable Vishnu lies. After offering prayers to the Supreme Personality, he told them of the earth's plight. Brahma then heard Vishnu speak to him from within his heart, where the Lord ever resides as the supersoul of all beings. The Lord told him that he would soon appear on the earth to destroy the demons. His personal servants would incarnate along with him. All the gods should expand themselves by their mystic power and take birth on earth. Assisted by all of them, the Lord would execute his divine plan for the salvation of the earth. Bhishma paused and looked at Duryodhan. He knew the Kaurava cared little for histories. Although he is prepared to accept that Lord Vishnu was a powerful being who acted for the gods' good, Duryodhan could not accept Vishnu's identity as the supreme. Duryodhan was not a religious man in that sense. Despite performing his religious duty as a kshatriya, he had no concept of serving and pleasing a god who controlled everything. He believed in his own power. Now, in a moment of distress, where it was obvious that his own power was limited, Bhishma had hoped to find his mind more open. He went on addressing the grieving prince. That eternal and indescribable Lord Vishnu has now appeared as Krishna. Indeed, it is Krishna who is the source of Vishnu. There is no difference between the two personalities. O Duryodhan, you have already heard that Krishna and Arjuna are the two ancient rishis, Narayan and Nara. Know, too, that the many kings and kshatriyas fighting with them are expansions of the gods. The Pandavas themselves are all former Indras from different ages. Through them, Krishna will execute his divine plan to kill the demons who have amassed as your army. O King, Krishna's will is infallible. He is the supreme mystery, the supreme shelter, and the supreme glory. Do not disregard him, thinking him an ordinary man. You should worship that undeteriorating being of endless energies. The wise say that one who thinks Krishna to be an ordinary man is a fool and a sinner. Bhishma stopped, and Duryodhan sat in thought. It was hard to accept that Krishna was the all-powerful supreme being. Certainly he was an extraordinarily powerful person, but God? Could any being lay claim to possessing such power? Some great force or power lay beyond everything, that was sure, but how could it be a person? And how could that person be Krishna, who had sided with his foes? After all, was he, Duryodhan, the king of the Kurus, really such an irreligious person? Everyone condemned him as such, but he had always done his duty and tried to rule the people with justice. If there was a god, why should he be antagonistic toward him? But if Krishna was God, it would certainly explain why the Pandavas proved so difficult to overpower. Why, though, was he favoring Pandu's sons? Duryodhan took a deep breath. "Tell me more about Krishna," he asked, his voice unusually subdued. "I always hear him spoken of as the highest being. O grandsire, I desire to know all about his position and his glory." Bhishma then described Krishna's opulence as he had heard it from Narada, Vyasadeva, Markandeya, and Parasuram. All these wise sages accept Krishna's divinity. They consider him the master and sustainer of all beings. He is everyone's well-wisher and friend. But you do not see him as such, O King. For this reason I consider you to be a Rakshasa of wicked heart and mind. You are immersed in ignorance, absorbed only in thoughts of selfish happiness. Thus you cannot know Krishna. He can only be known by those free from lust, greed, and anger, and those who realize themselves to be his eternal servants. O King, try to see things in this way, for that alone will lead to everlasting happiness. Make peace and live happily with your cousins. You cannot win this war. Your enmity toward Krishna and the Pandavas will result only in suffering and defeat." Hearing Bhishma speak at length about Krishna, many of the kings surrounding Duryodhan began to regard the Yadava as the supreme person. Even Duryodhan began to wonder. Perhaps Krishna was something more than just a man. Maybe he was even higher than a celestial. But it was too late to turn back from the fight now. Whoever Krishna was, the Pandavas were still Duryodhan's enemies. He would give them nothing. If they wanted the kingdom, they would have to fight for it. Even if their army was comprised of expansions of the gods, his forces would be empowered by the Danavas, whose power was equal to that of the gods. Duryodhan dismissed the assembly and went to bed. Before laying down to sleep, he bowed down to Krishna. If the Yadu hero was actually the supreme, then it would do no harm to offer him some respect. Perhaps, the prince thought, his own fortunes might change. Lying on his milk-white silk sheets, Duryodhan then slept fitfully. As the sun rose on the fifth day, the two armies again rushed at one another. The warriors slain the previous day had been allowed to lay on a hero's bed for one night, and then had been cremated at dawn, leaving the field clear for the day's action. Worked up with the fury of battle, the opposing troops again slaughtered one another. The killing did not end at any time throughout the day. Arjuna showed his incomparable prowess as he moved about the field. The Gandiva bow resembled flashes of lightning as he released innumerable arrows on all sides. Other great fighters such as Abhimanyu, Bhima, the twins, Satyaki, and Yudhisthir also created havoc among the Kauravas. On the Kaurava side, Bhishma and the other powerful warriors continued their destruction of the Pandava army. Sikandi faced Bhishma on a number of occasions, intent upon his destruction, but each time Bhishma turned away from the fight. Justadyumna also constantly sought an opportunity to slay Drona, but the Kuru preceptor held off his attack and drove Justadyumna back with his own irresistible assault. Drupada's son wondered how he could ever fulfill his destiny, but he fearlessly challenged Drona again and again. Bhima, also, constantly watched for any opportunities to catch Dhritarashtra's sons. He was determined to kill them as quickly as possible. As he roved across the battlefield, he appeared like the god of death. He favored fighting with his mace, although he was equally accomplished with the bow, and would frequently shower volleys of arrows on the Kurus. The fifth, sixth, and seventh days passed, with many men being slaughtered, but none of the principal warriors falling on either side. In an attempt to limit the destruction that Arjuna was causing among his troops, Duryodhan assigned Susharma and his army, the Shamshaptakas, to engage him. Those warriors challenged Arjuna at the start of each day, and the Pandava duly fought with them, killing thousands. Despite their inferior numbers, the Pandava army slowly wore down the enemy. Duryodhan repeatedly harangued Bhishma and Drona, accusing them of partiality toward the Pandavas. Both of them tried again and again to convince Duryodhan to stop the war and make peace, but Duryodhan was resolute. The fight would continue. On the eighth day, Bhima encountered and killed another 17 of Duryodhan's brothers. Although a large contingent of them had surrounded Bhima and hurled their weapons at him, he cut them down relentlessly with his arrows. Standing on his chariot, it was clear that he intended to kill all of Duryodhan's brothers there and then. Only when Drona came forward showering him with arrows were they able to stop him. By shooting so many arrows that Bhima could no longer be seen, Drona allowed Dhritarashtra's sons to escape. Breaking free from Drona's attack, Bhima again ranged about the battlefield like a wolf amid a flock of sheep. As Bhima ravaged the Kaurava troops, the other Pandava heroes slew warriors in other parts of the battlefield. Arjuna's son, Iravan, came to the battle. Born from the Naga princess Ulupi, Iravan was a powerful celestial fighter. He headed a division of warriors who rode upon many-hued horses, which had been raised on the high tracks of the Himalayas. The horses were clad in steel-mailed and adorned in gold. The Naga fighters riding them charged at the Kauravas with fearful cries, appearing amid the battle like a flock of swans on the bosom of the ocean. The Naga cavalry were met on Duryodhan's side by the large division of horseback warriors from the hilly region of Gandhara, led by Sakuni's six younger brothers. Covered in armor and screaming battle cries, they rushed at Iravan and his troops and penetrated their forces, their minds fixed on victory or the attainment of heaven. Iravan laughed loudly, calling out to his followers, "Kill all these warriors by any means." The Nagas displayed dazzling skills at riding and fighting. Their horses seemed to float in the air, and their weapons fell from all sides onto their enemies. The Gandhara fighters were crushed, leaving only Shakuni's brothers to face the Nagas. They threw lances at Iravan and pierced his armor. The lances stuck out from his chest, back, and huge legs. Undaunted, Iravan pulled out the lances and hurled them back at his roaring foes. He came down from his horse with blood streaming from his wounds. Taking out a fearsome saber, he ran at Suvala's sons. The powerful Naga appeared like a moving mountain covered with red oxides. As he whirled his saber and buckler, he covered himself on all sides. Although the Gandhara princes shot hundreds of arrows at him, they could find no gap in his defense. They surrounded Iravan and hurled their long lances. Beating down their spears, Iravan leapt up with his saber and cut off their arms and legs. Their mutilated limbs fell to the ground, along with their weapons, armor, and shields. Iravan then swung his saber with deadly accuracy, severing his opponent's heads. Only one prince, Vrishabha, escaped. He ran to Duryodhan to report that the Gandhara forces had been annihilated. Duryodhan's wrath flared. He called for Alambusha, a massive Rakshasa of frightful appearance. Alambusha had joined with Duryodhan because he hated Bhima, who had slain his brother Bhaka. As he came before Duryodhan, the Kaurava said, "Behold the destruction caused by Arjuna's son. The master of illusions, Iravan, can only be checked by one of equal power. O hero, you are capable of going anywhere on the earth and in the sky. You can assume forms at will. Go and slay Iravan in battle, the son of your sworn enemy's brother." Replying, "So be it," the Rakshasa uttered his terrible war cry and rushed at Iravan. By his mystic power, he created a large division of demons mounted upon chargers. The demon warriors held lances fitted with spiked ends and brandished bludgeons stained with blood. Seeing Alambusha racing toward him, Iravan rallied his horsemen. Then the Nagas and Rakshasas clashed. Soon both divisions were slain, and Iravan and Alambusha faced one another alone, just as Indra met Vritasura in ancient times. As the Rakshasa approached Iravan, the Naga swung his saber and cut apart his enemy's sword. Alambusha rose into the sky and confounded Iravan's attack. Iravan, by his own powers, followed the Rakshasa into the heavens. In their shining armor, the fighters appeared like two planets colliding. Assailing the Rakshasa with great force, Iravan cut off his limbs and mutilated his body. But Alambusha somehow evaded death. Rather, he immediately appeared in a new youthful body. Iravan slashed him again and again with his saber and battle axe, but the Rakshasa appeared in a new body each time. Alambusha roared discordantly, the sound filling the sky. He suddenly assumed a dreadful and prodigious form and tried to capture Iravan. As thousands of warriors looked on from below, Iravan created his own illusions. He appeared in an enormous form, resembling Anantasesha. He was surrounded by numerous other Nagas in the forms of terrible-looking serpents. They closed on Alambusha, baring their fangs and spitting poison. The Rakshasa, after reflecting for a moment, assumed the form of Garuda. Swooping about rapidly, he devoured his antagonists. Iravan was confounded by Alambusha's illusory powers. As the Naga again assumed his own form, Alambusha rushed at him, swinging his great sword. With a powerful stroke, he cut off Iravan's head, graced with earrings and a diadem, and it fell down to the earth like the moon falling from the heavens. Duryodhan and his followers cheered loudly and fought on with renewed vigor. The Pandava forces cried out in dismay. Elsewhere on the field, Arjuna battled the Samshaptakas, unaware of his son's death. But Katochka had seen Iravan's death. Enraged, he sent up a huge roar. The earth with her mountains and lakes quaked as the terrifying cry echoed off the distant hills. The Kauravas trembled and perspired. Their limbs froze in fear, and they gazed about to see what had caused that horrific sound. Depressed by the cry, they fled in all directions, like a herd of deer frightened by a lion. Katochka raised his blazing trident and advanced toward the Kauravas. He was backed by hordes of Rakshasas, who had all assumed fearful forms. As they rushed into battle, they dispersed the enemy troops like the wind blowing away dust and debris. Duryodhan saw his forces fleeing in fear at the sight of the Rakshasas. Shouting out a battle cry, he stood firm to face them. He shook his bow and took out a number of long razor-headed shafts. Behind him stood a large division of elephant fighters. They rushed at the Rakshasas, yelling out their war cries again and again. Katochka was furious. Screaming, he and his loyal followers met Duryodhan's forces. Appearing as fiends, goblins, and hideous demons, the mighty Rakshasas attacked the elephants. With arrows, darts, sabers, lances, mallets, and battle axes, they slew the warriors who rode them, then lifted boulders and trees and killed the elephants. Crushing and butchering the entire division, the Rakshasas roared in triumph. Duryodhan was beside himself with anger. Heedless of his own life, he rushed at Katochka and his troops. The powerful Kuru sped countless arrows at his foes. He killed dozens of them, and they fell screaming to the earth. Duryodhan exhibited astonishing prowess as he ranged about the field. His shafts flew like lightning and severely afflicted the Rakshasas. Katochka then personally attacked Duryodhan. Although Katochka rushed forward like death incarnate, Duryodhan did not waver. The Rakshasa approached him and began to rebuke him. "O evil-minded one, today I will liquidate the debt I owe my fathers, whom you exiled. You robbed such virtuous men and insulted their chaste wife. O man of perverse intelligence, wretch of your race, for these and many other insults I will now punish you. Stand and fight, if you have any courage." Biting his lips, Katochka released a shower of arrows at Duryodhan. The Kaurava seemed like a mountain under a storm in the rainy season, but he bore the arrows without flinching, as if he were an elephant receiving a shower of flowers. He shot 25 shafts at the Rakshasa in reply. His arrows fell like serpents falling upon the Gandamandana mountain. Pierced and bleeding, Katochka resolved to kill Duryodhan. Forgetful of his father's vow, he took up a mighty lance, which was capable of penetrating rock. It blazed with an effulgence as Katochka raised it to destroy Duryodhan. Seeing the Kauravan danger, the leader of an elephant division, a king named Bunga, urged his elephant forward. He came between Duryodhan and the Rakshasa, just as the lance was hurled. Struck by the blazing lance, the elephant was slain, and the king leapt from its back. Duryodhan seethed. His forces were being slain on all sides. And now Bhima's Rakshasa son stood before him like an immovable mountain. How could he possibly overpower him? But keeping in mind his Kshatriya duty, the Kaurava prince stood firm. He let go a number of searing shafts that flew toward Katochka like a cluster of comets. The Rakshasa moved about swiftly and expertly avoided the arrows. he roared repeatedly, petrifying his enemies. Hearing his roars, Bhishma became fearful for Duryodhan's life. He went quickly to Drona and said, "It seems from his cries that Ghatotchka is overpowering the king. No creature can conquer Bhima's son. Only you can help the king. Go at once and rescue him. May good betide you." Drona immediately turned toward the sound of Ghatotchka's roars. He was followed by Ashvatthama, Kripa, Balika, Somadatta, Shalya, Burishrava, and other Kuru warriors. Reaching Duryodhan, Drona saw that he was hard-pressed. He quickly shot a volley of arrows at Ghatotchka, while the other Kurus attacked the Rakshasa army with arrows, darts, and lances. The crack of bowstrings striking leather fences sounded like the crackling of burning bamboos in a forest fire. The Kurus hurled their lances at the Rakshasas, and they soared through the air like thousands of virulent serpents. Seeing the Kuru force arriving, Ghatotchka laughed and stood his ground. With another terrible yell, he stretched his huge bow and released a crescent-headed shaft that destroyed Drona's bow. With other arrows, he pierced all the leading Kurus and broke their standards. So swift was his movement that the Kurus had hardly any opportunity to train their weapons upon him before they were struck by his arrows. The power of his shafts sent them reeling. Many of them sat down on the terraces of their chariots, stunned and wounded. As the Kurus fell back under the fierce assault, Ghatotchka focused his attention on Duryodhan. He rushed at him with his sword held high. Seeing this, the Kurus rallied and rained arrows upon the roaring Rakshasa. Sorely afflicted, Ghatotchka rose into the sky like an eagle. His roars carried to Yudhisthira, who said to Bhima, "Those are surely the roars of your son. I suspect he is under attack from many powerful foes. O foremost of men, go at once to his assistance." Bhima obeyed his brother's instruction and raced off toward Ghatotchka, supported by other Pandava chariot warriors and a large contingent of soldiers. As he approached his son, he shouted out his battle cry. Hearing Bhima's cries, the Kurus turned pale with fear. As he rushed toward them, many fled, but the leading Kurus stood their ground. A violent battle ensued between them and the combined forces of Ghatotchka and Bhima. Duryodhan rallied his troops, and they returned to the fight, only to be slaughtered by the charging Pandava warriors. The earth became thick with the mutilated bodies of fighters from both sides. The clash of weapons striking armor was deafening. A thick cloud of red dust filled the air, and no one could see anything clearly. In that awful and confused encounter, friend struck friend, unable to distinguish them from foe. Gradually, the earth became covered with so much blood that the dust cloud subsided. Everything again became visible, revealing scenes of destruction everywhere. Bhima and Ghatotchka swept about the field like whirlwinds, killing thousands of men. Duryodhan saw his forces overpowered. He ordered Bhagadatta, the king of Pragyotisha, to attack Bhima and his son. The mighty warrior rode upon a great elephant, no less powerful than Aravata. Backed by a vast division of other elephant warriors, he advanced toward Bhima, shouting out his challenge. Seeing him approach like a moving mountain, the Pandava fighter surrounded him and assailed his elephant with numerous shafts that thudded into its side. Wounded by hundreds of arrows, the huge beast resembled a hill decorated with seams of red chalk. It screamed in fury and rushed at its foes, trampling entire chariots with their horses, charioteers, and warriors. Despite its wounds, the elephant could not be checked. The ruler of the Dasarhas, Shatradev, mounted upon another elephant, ran in fury at Bhagadatta. The two elephants collided, but Bhagadatta's mount did not waver. Shatradev's mount, however, stumbled backwards. In swift succession, Bhagadatta hurled at him 14 lances, decked with gems and fitted with long, barbed points. They pierced through the elephant's armor and sent it reeling. Screaming in pain, the Dasarha monarch's elephant turned and ran, crushing the army to which it belonged. Bhagadatta roared in joy and goaded on his own beast, which began to careen wildly about the field. The unstoppable elephant crushed divisions of soldiers as it ran here and there. The Pandavas were dispersed, and they raced away in all directions, shouting in terror. Ghatotchka then challenged Bhagadatta with a roar of anger. Assuming an immense form, he hurled a blazing trident at the elephant. As it flew, it emitted fire. Bhagadatta instantly shot a crescent-headed shaft that cut the trident down before it reached him. It fell in pieces to the earth, like a couple of meteors fallen from heaven. Bhagadatta then threw a lance at the Rakshasa that blazed as it flew. Ghatotchka leapt up and caught that lance. Yelling, he broke it across his thighs as the Pandavas cheered. Infuriated, Bhagadatta rushed at the Pandava warriors, backed by his elephant division, and a fierce fight ensued. Ghatotchka kept Bhagadatta at bay, while Bhima and the other warriors slaughtered the enemy troops.